Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to the Red Sea Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux. Today, I am joined by both Brian Joyner and Matt Collins of Over the Monster. You can find these gentlemen on Twitter at @MattRYCollins and at Brian Joyner. Brian with a Y, Joyner with an I. Welcome back to the show, guys. I'm glad we have the whole crew back.
It's very fun to have everybody back, I suppose.
You sound so pumped, dude.
And by everyone, you just mean me.
Yeah, I guess so.
You are everyone, Brian. You should know this by now.
Thank you, Jay.
Anyhow, we have a 9-2 baseball team to discuss, one that is currently playing the New York Yankees. Well, not currently, but in an hour's time or so, they'll be playing the Yankees. And it's awesome. This is an exciting year so far. Last time we talked on the podcast, we still had a healthy Xander Bogaerts. We also had... a six-game winning streak that has now been snapped at 9 games, but a lot has gone right for this club in the early going. This Yankee series has been incredible. I was at the game on Tuesday with Sale and Severino. That did not go how I expected at all, but in like the best possible way that it could have gone. And then yesterday's game was really noteworthy. So I want to start off the show by talking about both of those games.
Yeah. Tuesday was awesome. Wednesday wasn't so awesome, I guess. Be the quick wrap up.
Brian, # analysis from you?
No, that's where I'm at too.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll elaborate with some excitement here. The game was crazy on Tuesday. Sale looked good. And so I'm now convinced that Sale... in the velocity issues that we were talking about last time, Matt, are completely up to Sale. Because when I was watching him during the game, he was throwing his fastball at wildly different speeds depending on the situation. And it was like he knew how to throw almost like a pseudo changeup and locate it well during that game. So it was pretty cool. I mean, it was weird. Sometimes he'd throw a fastball at like 91, 89, and then when he'd need a fastball high heat in the zone, he'd throw 96. So I'm 100% convinced that there's nothing wrong with the guy. I think that he just has sort of a freakish ability to throw a non-changeup changeup when he needs to.
Yeah, he's kind of always done that. He was doing that last year, too. It just seemed like his first two games he wasn't getting it up when he wanted to throw it hard. He wasn't getting it up his eye. But the thing that stood out to me on Tuesday with him was that first inning, he could not throw his slider. He tried to throw a few in the first two at-bats, and it wasn't spinning at all. He wasn't hitting the spots. And then he just went all fastballs for a while and somehow still was able to get guys out. And then he got his slider back, which was really encouraging. So we still haven't really seen him at his very best, but he's still Chris Sale, so he doesn't need to be at his very best to dominate, fortunately.
Matt, I'll tell you how he got people out. He was throwing to strikeout machines.
Stanton?
Yeah. I mean, he was up in the first inning, right?
Yeah, those they are just daring him to hit high fastballs right now. That's all he's seen this entire series.
It's incredible.
He can't do anything about it either. It's pretty hilarious to watch. Although Judge had a really good game on Tuesday.
And Wednesday. Judge's I don't like how good Aaron Judge is. I'm not okay with it.
He's way better than I thought. So I thought that Aaron Judge was going to have some sort of swing and miss issues to his game, a la Stanton, things that could be exploited. But it just seems like the guy keeps filling in whatever holes there are that exist in his game. And I'm convinced that he is a far better player than Giancarlo Stanton.
Ooh. I mean,
it's a little early for that, but certainly
I think
he's possible.
Yeah, I think I think it's fair to say he's better. To say he's far and away, it might be a little extreme, but I see where you're coming from at least.
Yeah. I thought that I couldn't remember a home run hit to straightaway center in Fenway as far as Judge's until JD Martinez hit it to the exact same seat the next night.
I still feel like the tape measure shot for this year is that Xander Bogaerts home run that I don't know if it still landed.
Oh yeah, over everything.
Yeah, just
yeah.
I mean that one was on the pike for sure.
Well, yeah, I didn't see Hanley's yesterday, but I heard good things about it.
Hanley's wasn't like super deep. It just it left in a tenth of a second. He just smoked it. He blinked and it was already in some guy's glove in the monster seats.
So I want to get back to the Chris Sale thing, though, because you mentioned he wasn't able to locate his slider. I noticed that as well. He did get it back later in the game, but it was also cold as shit at that game, so I wonder how much that had to do with it. And then the other thing is, since he couldn't throw that pitch effectively, he was throwing more changeups than I typically see from Sale. Do you think that's something that he's going to continue to do, or is that just because he didn't have his slider that day?
Probably more because he didn't have the slider. But, I mean, you know his thing. He doesn't shake off. It's not really his call. He doesn't shake off the catcher. So I guess if Vasquez thinks that the changeup's working, he's going to throw the changeup.
Mm. Yeah, I think that maybe counterintuitively, as his velocity, I mean, if we're talking long-term and short-term, you know, changeup, from what I understand, the changeup is, from a hitter's perspective, like the last, maybe outside of a splitter, the last pitch they want to go against. So it's possible he incorporates it more into his arsenal just as a factor of, you know, just continuing to hone the best stuff he has at any given time. The one thing I'll say about the cold is that, I mean, he did not have any problem in the cold last year. He just destroyed everyone in April. So it's possible any given night that could be it. But I don't know. I mean, I thought he looked, if that was him, not great, that's a great sign for us.
Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. I think we've been seeing Chris Sale at not great Chris Sale so far, and he's still top five in the American League in ERA and WHIP and strikeouts in every possible category. So it's nice to see, and I don't think any of us want to see best Chris Sale right now, except for maybe Matt, because I do remember you saying that.
Yeah, but I want to see best Chris Sale whenever I possibly can.
Okay. A couple more takeaways about that game, though. The offense was awesome, and I was really surprised at how effectively they were able to get around on premium velocity. Severino was pumping 9,900 consistently throughout that game, and it seemed like the lineup had absolutely no problem with it. And I have to say, Mookie Betts is not human. Like, the things that he can do, the grand slam that he hit was just ridiculous. The guy has such fast hands. He seems to see pitches better than anybody not named Trout or Votto. It's a real treat to see him this year. And I think, Matt, you wrote a really good article today about Mookie Betts and how he's performing right now. Can you talk a little about just how ridiculous his performance is right now?
Yeah. I mean, he's basically doing everything well. He's a little more aggressive in the strike zone, but he's way more aggressive in the middle of the strike zone, which is really what you want to see. Sometimes those like Z swing rates that you see on BP and Fangraphs can be a little misleading because they count pitches in the middle of the zone the same as pitches on the edge of the zone. But for a guy like Betts, he has such an absurd understanding of the strike zone that he's going to let those pitches on the edge of the zone go by because he knows he doesn't swing and miss. He's such a good two-strike hitter that he can afford to be a little more passive, and now he's kind of jumping on those early pitches that he was taking last year in the middle of the zone. And I think on Tuesday you really saw what Cora was going for, putting Betts in the leadoff spot and Benintendi right behind him, and getting off to that hot start and putting immediate pressure. That was like the ideal way that would play out. Obviously it's not going to be that good every time, but man, when these guys are all going, that lineup is scary.
Yeah, it sure is. I was salivating at the performance of Betts, Benintendi, and Hanley in that lineup, and having to face those three guys in a row is just like, it's going to be a complete nightmare for any pitcher. And you saw what happened to Severino, one of the better pitchers in the game. They handled him. And then they handled good relievers as well. So I was a little bit surprised about that. Brian, I want to talk to you about Benintendi because I was super impressed by what I saw from Benintendi on Tuesday. However, you wrote an article recently noting that Benintendi has been far less aggressive than most of the other guys on the team. Benintendi also known for having an amazing eye at the plate, but it doesn't seem like he's fully buying into this aggressiveness thing, and he did get off to a little bit of a slow start over the first few games.
Well, I didn't say that he was necessarily relatively passive. It was strange because Fangraphs has two sets of pitch recognition numbers, and by one he was just as aggressive as the rest of the team, but then by the other he was considerably more passive and swinging at fewer balls in the zone and many more out of the zone. However, as soon as I wrote that article, the game you were at when he had to either the double off, did he have a double and a triple? He was swinging away. Right. And definitely the double, that was a first pitch that he just drilled. So he's definitely with the program. I had gone back and forth with another guy about whether the Red Sox approach was good or not. And then Matt subtweeted us with a big article. And I think that the problem, insofar as it was one, in the early going with the approach was that they weren't necessarily doing it. Okay. And I think that they are clearly doing it now. I mean, it's definitely working for Betts, but as Matt said, he can let pitches go by because he's got an eye. I think obviously Hanley has been the biggest beneficiary of it. So it's been good to see, and it was really good to see Benintendi have more than one solid hit in the game.
Yeah, it really was. And that triple, he was absolutely moving around the bases too. I was pumped to see just how fast he is in person too. Man, he's awesome. When Benintendi's going this well, Betts is going this well, this is a completely different team. And JD also looked great during that game. So pretty much saw everything working well for the club. Also, I have to say, Matt, I was a big-time Hanley doubter coming into this season. But holy shit, I was right next to the Hanley, the on-deck circle, so I get to see Hanley come up to the plate a bunch of times, and I get to watch him take practice swings and whatever. That dude is in shape right now. Holy shit. Like, for him, he's ripped. I think this is the best shape I've ever seen him in no hyperbole.
He's going 30-30, man. You got to be in good shape if you're going 30-30.
Yeah. He really seems to be trying for it.
He's 100% trying for it.
That is crazy, Jake, to me.
Jake, I have a question. You sat right behind the on-deck circle. Were you behind the new netting?
I was, yeah.
Did it bother you at all?
No, I didn't even notice it. Anybody that complains about netting is an idiot because, okay. I mean, what, you don't want your kid to get hit in the face with a fastball? Okay, great. Like, you know, that's all anybody can complain about. It doesn't affect the game at all. The netting's awesome. Fenway's awesome. Also, when you sit in those seats, you get beer vendors and hot dog vendors that come over to you, which is great because I always am miffed when I go to Fenway and I have bad seats, and I'm like, where the hell is the beer guy, you know? But, yeah, I didn't realize that there was such a there's such a class distinction there at Fenway. It's sort of a
– The people in the upper class tend not to notice that.
Yeah, well, I'm not an upper class person, Brian. I am clearly posing as the first estate here to make a French Revolution reference. But
You know, I have to watch the Yankees feed because I live in the New York area. And Paul O'Neill, of all people, was saying really he loves Fenway because and they were showing, like, the clam chowder vendors. He's saying, I love it because it just looks different than any other stadium. Just thought about that because of the vendors, and I thought that was cool.
Yeah, no, the clam chowder vendor was super active. And honestly, the guy was selling chowder. Like, it was a cold night, and the chowder guy and the hot chocolate guy were killing it. And
the
I was
hot
like,
chocolate.
Yeah, man. Like, I
that's
was like,
that's the most, because they I read something about this a couple years ago. The vendors have a draft every day to figure out what they're gonna sell. And the beginning of the year, the hot chocolate is always the first one to go because they make bank this time of year.
They were doubling up the cups so that they were like, you know, the tray can hold a row of hot chocolate, right? But then they would take a hot chocolate and put them in between the cups. So
that
it was like
terrifying.
Almost a pseudo second row there. I didn't see any of them drop. But if I was to do a draft, though, Matt, I would pick the hot dogs. Because hot dogs, you're getting $5.50 a piece for them. Everybody's always giving you $7, and almost no one ever expects change. So with the other items that are cleanly priced at a dollar, you're not getting as much tip.
They don't sell beer in the aisles, I take it.
They do. That wasn't really part of the draft. Like, the super senior guys would just, like, automatically get the beer.
Yeah, I sold peanuts once at Soldier Field for a Packers Bears game, and in that case, I had to get a temporary union card. Because I was the bottom of the barrel, I had no choice but to take peanuts.
Is peanuts a bad gig?
No, it was fine. I made like $100 in 3 hours 20 years ago, so.
Okay. Yeah, that's not bad at all.
The beer guys at Soldier Field, they never even made it into the stands. They just had to stand in the concourse. People came right up to them.
That's amazing. Chicago is a beautiful place, isn't it? So anyhow, we have the rubber game this evening. We have Rick Porcello opposing Sonny Gray. This has already been a super exciting series. We're going to see who takes it right now. But as fun as the Tuesday game was, the Wednesday game was fun, but it was fun in a different way. It was horrifying in the first inning seeing David Price give up four runs and then leave with a sensation in his arm. And then it was cool to see the Grand Slam and the Red Sox look like they were about to challenge and come back. But then it didn't end up amounting to anything. And then I have to mention the two fights that we had. One verbal assault from Brock Holt. First thing I want to ask you guys about, was that worthy of Tyler Austin getting hit by Joe Kelly, the spike that he gave to Brock Holt? It looked pretty friggin' intentional to me.
It was a bad slide, but just stop throwing at people. I'm so sick of this.
It was a bad slide. I agree with Matt wholeheartedly. I like fights when other teams are involved, like the Arenado fight. I loved it because the Red Sox aren't involved, though I dislike them on principle. I think it wasn't so much the slide as much as Austin just getting up in Holt's grill after Holt said, saw him look at him and goes, "Hey, fuck you." And I think that more than, you know, once the bench is cleared, which was totally unnecessary in the first place.
Yeah, I can't believe the bench is cleared for that.
And I wonder, I hadn't thought about this now, but I wonder if the bench is clearing the first time was sort of an indication that there was bad blood to begin with, which doesn't mean that the slide was intentional or not. It just meant that it might have been a powder keg before then. So especially after the Yankees got their asses kicked at the game Jake was at. I know I'm not the only one. I was tired, and after Hembree, after the Grand Slam, I went to sleep. But after Hembree struck out Austin without a problem, because Austin cannot hit righties, I was like, "Oh, good, this is over." And I woke up and saw all this nonsense.
I think Manny Machado was probably watching all this and just Instagramming himself in like pinstripes. Because he would like nothing more than to join this nonsense on the Yankees side, I think.
I don't know. But I want to go back to that first benches clearing thing. Did you guys see the video and just like the 2-second clip of Devers running over to Holt when that happened?
Yes.
It was incredible. He had no idea what was going on, but he was like he was pretty psyched to be involved. He kind of just looked over. It's like, ooh, something's happening.
He looked like the fat kid running over to like, there's like something's happening. He's like, "Ooh, what's this?" I didn't notice until you posted it. Yeah, it was great. It was awesome. But the best thing, look, if we're going to have a fight, it's hard to have a better one than the Joe Kelly. Like, Christian Vasquez is clearly not stopping Austin. They're ready for the fight. And Joe Kelly's saying, "No, no, no, come on, let's do this."
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, Austin wasn't sure if he was going to go out, and then Kelly egging him on. See, I love the fight, which I shouldn't. I mean, it's stupid and sort of barbaric or whatever, but the fighting is fine. It's just everything that leads up to the fight is always dumb and stupid and shouldn't happen, so I don't really know how we get the fights without the other stuff, but I'm just sick of people throwing at hitters.
I mean, I maintain that if the Yankees were really, as a team, pissed off, Gary Sanchez, I mean, we know he fights dirty. And obviously, it seemed like Judge just wrapped up Kelly and was like 2 seconds away from just sticking out his arms so that and turning in circles so that nobody could get near them. Like, just stop it. Like, those guys have the power to dictate whether everyone fights, almost.
Ryan, I have to ask, why the hell do you have such a strong suspicion that Gary Sanchez fights
dirty? Did you see the fight against the Tigers?
He had that sucker punch last year.
He did have that sucker punch, but like, you describe Gary Sanchez like he's a trained assassin on this on this podcast.
He is. He's a Yankee. He deserves it. But my theory for tonight, especially with Pointer to the DL, which we're going to get to, is they should just call up Jeremy Barfield just to put him on the bench.
Oh, a little muscle? I love it.
Around. Just have him.
Dude, but let's be honest. If there's any team getting into a fight with the Yankees, you automatically lose. I mean, Judge.
Well, that's what Holt said after the game. They said, I forget what they asked him, but he was basically just like, "Yeah, I didn't really want to fight them. Have you seen them? They're huge."
Yeah, it's absurd the size of the Yankees. So, like, I was just I was happy that it stopped where it did. And Joe Kelly reportedly, I think, Matt, you told me this, best athlete on the team. So I was kind of excited to see Joe Kelly.
I didn't tell you that. I have no idea where that came from.
Was it you, Brian? Someone told me this.
I did not.
Yes. So I have heard from someone, I can't remember who, that Joe Kelly is actually like one of the fastest and strongest guys on the team.
He's wiry. I can see him being a good athlete. I don't buy for a second he's a better athlete than like Mookie Betts, but I can see him being a good athlete.
Or JBJ. I would say those two.
Ugh, JBJ was brutal at the plate. Let's talk about Price though. So Price goes down with an injury. We don't really know what the hell this injury is. It's been really weirdly reported. People are saying that it's not a big deal. It was just a sensation in his hand. This kind of scares the shit out of me because we've all been sort of waiting for, you know, something to go wrong with Price's health because he had issues and he looked so good the first two starts. What do you guys make of this?
It's definitely not great. I mean, exactly. I don't know. I just hear a weird sensation in a guy's throwing hand who has an elbow history. And I don't understand why they're so confident about it. They don't seem worried at all. Which strangely makes me feel not worried because I just don't understand how they couldn't be worried. And if they're not, then it has to be fine. They said that he had something like this in Detroit a couple of years ago. And he ended up making his next start and didn't have any problems with it again. And he has a magic elbow, so I guess that helps. I don't know. I'm just hoping it has something to do with the cold, and he'll be fine for his next start. He threw today, and they said he was all right.
The opposite for me. It worries me because it seems like almost aggressively too aggressive with the "we think he's going to be fine." Almost to me, it's just speculation, that they're saying it so he doesn't push back. We'll see. I mean, if that's unfair to Price, I would say that his reputation precedes him in this instance. And, I mean, we'll see in 3 days or 4 days.
What would you guys say to the chatter out there of people saying, yeah, it's really convenient that he came out of the game in the first inning after giving up 4 runs to the New York Yankees in a big spot, sort of continuing that narrative of David Price just shrinks when the spotlight's on him?
Yeah, that definitely sounds like something the Red Sox would do, just destroy their bullpen because David Price didn't want to pitch anymore. That sounds right.
Hey, it put Bobby Pointer on the DL. So look, you get 2-for-1.
I really just wanted to hear Matt get riled up about this. So that's why I had to
put that in. I'm hooting and hollering over here, Jake.
All right, so let's talk about the end of that game, though, because it was sort of a curious decision. At the end of the game, Cora decided to pinch hit for Sandy Leon when he had both Benintendi and Blake Swihart on the bench. Guys, this isn't really defensible, is it?
No, it was an awful decision. I don't know. Did anybody ask him about it after the game? Probably not. I'm sure they were all asking about the fights. I didn't see any quotes about it, so I don't know if he gave his reasoning for it, but I can't think of one good reason.
Jake, let me just say two things, actually. The first thing is that for all the talk of Cora having different processes, feral, mm-hmm. It's very Ferrellian to say, I decided this number of days in advance, Benintendi is getting a day off. Now, he also got the day off against the right. I guess Sonny Gray's a righty. I always think he's a lefty. Forget that. But inflexibility with regard to the day off. Like, it was his day off and he wasn't coming in. That's my only explanation for it. The other thing I have to say is that, unfortunately, I have to go eat dinner because it is being served right now. So hopefully next time I can be on for the whole cast, but I would like to eat dinner with the children.
What are you having for dinner, Brian?
Yeah, that's the thing. She made some like lemon pasta and it smells so good and I'm so hungry. I'm going to go eat it.
God damn it.
All right. I know. Well, that was Brian. So thanks, Brian.
Bye, guys. I'll see you next
time. Hi, Brian.
All right. So Yankee series, finishes up tonight. But as Brian mentioned before, he went to go eat dinner. His boy Bobby Pointer. I almost called him Brian Pointer. that would make Brian so happy right now. Has landed on the DL as well. We haven't talked since Xander landed on the DL with a freak injury. I still can't get over how weird Xander's injury was with that slide and chipping his talus bone and all sorts of weird stuff. But any thoughts on these two moves? It seems like Walden's going to get the call up for Pointer right now.
Yeah, Walden did get the call. He's just, I mean, it's just another guy who can go multiple innings right now. They have Brian Johnson as a reliever, for now at least, as a lefty. So, sucks to see Pointer go down. I hope he's back soon. He was looking pretty good, but they needed a fresh arm anyways. The Xander thing really sucks. And, yeah, like you said, it was so weird. He didn't look hurt at all when he got out of that dugout at first. And then they kind of took the camera off him, and like 30 seconds later, the trainers were out there and he couldn't walk, and it just got worse with every step he took. And then, like you said, the chip bone, and they're saying he's going to be back in 10 to 14 days, which sounds insane, but it's also crazy how quick people are to dismiss that. And like everybody's saying that it's actually going to be more like 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever. And I don't know. I'm just so sick of people playing doctor, like on Twitter. It drives me insane.
Yeah. I agree. We really don't know, and it's his own body. The one thing I will say is that this is a bone that doesn't get a lot of blood flow. So I guess that's a little bit of an issue, but it seems like, I don't know. It's just not as important a part of the body as like Xander Bogaerts' wrist injury. So I think if it's something that he's willing to play through in a couple of weeks, I think that he could probably come back. You know, I have no clue. Like you said, not a doctor. But at least this is not a hand injury, which is something that completely derailed him last year.
Yeah, definitely. But still, I don't think I want him playing through an injury. What foot is it?
He slid on his right side, so it's his right foot. So it's not the side that he uses for timing. It's his back.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So I guess, I mean, like, I don't know anything about anything. I'm a total idiot when it comes to this stuff. I never really took science classes. When I did it in high school, I slept. So I don't know this stuff. I'm taking the doctor's words for it that it's going to be a short stay. But like you said, it's better than the hand, but it's still not great. And if anything, it kind of, not that I totally believe in momentum, but I think it's kind of a thing. And it kind of kills a little momentum because he was so hot at the plate. But I don't know. I'm a little worried about him, but not super worried.
Is it fair to say that early in the season, he was the biggest beneficiary to this whole aggressiveness change?
Yeah, probably. Him or Hanley. Although I think Hanley was just more having a healthy shoulder. So yeah, I'd probably say it was Xander.
Yeah, and that's what kills me too, is you'd hate to see this stop Xander's momentum. He looked like he was on pace for far and away his best year. And although it was super early, it sucks to not have him in the lineup, especially in this Yankees series. Like, man, I was rocking my Xander Bogaerts jersey when I got there on Tuesday, and I was just a little bummed out that he wasn't there. But on the flip side of things, Pomerantz has made a rehab start and looks like he's going to be on the way back soon. Do you have any updates on Pomerantz, Matt?
He's making another rehab start, I want to say Saturday, in Portland. I know it's in Portland. It's either this Saturday or something. No, I'm not. I think it's an afternoon game and I have to work. I don't know. I'm going on Monday when Pomerantz is not pitching. But yeah, so he was a little shaky in that first start. I think he had 6 walks, which isn't great. But I don't know. I try not to look too hard into rehab appearances numbers. So they're hoping he's going to make one more rehab start and be back in the majors. So hopefully that is what happens. And it looks like it's Friday that he's making the start, not Saturday.
Okay. So I guess you know, good a time as any if you need to skip Price for Pomerantz to be coming on his way back.
Yeah. They did release that plan. They said Kessel Velazquez is scheduled to start Saturday right now, but if they need him tonight, then they'll use Johnson on Saturday, and then whoever doesn't pitch out of those two would pitch on Monday if Price can't go.
A Seves role, baby.
Yeah. He looked good. He was like the only guy who looked good last night.
Yeah, he did. He's been really solid all year. Every time he's gotten in the game, I've been impressed with Brian Johnson. So seems like he's going to be a real asset to the team this year.
Yeah, he's not super dominant, but he gets it done.
Yeah, yeah. Good location and knows how to pitch. So Red Sox off to a 9-2 start. And I think that when there's this whole idea, and I've been listening to other podcasts, hearing people talk about this too, but it's something that's been written about a lot on our site, on Baseball Prospectus, a lot of places. But the idea of banking wins early as being just as important as getting wins at any other time in the season. And right now the Red Sox sit at 9-2. They're going against the Yankees. Yankees are 6-6 right now. That perceived gap between those two teams before the season has essentially been erased at this point with just the games that have occurred so far. So with the Red Sox off to such a great start this year, should we change our expectations for the team in regards to the division and sort of what we expect from them?
I mean, I guess it depends what your expectations were, right?
Right.
I never really saw the division as this, like, automatic Yankees win like a lot of people did. So I still think that they're going to be neck and neck pretty much all year. And I picked the Red Sox to win by, like, a game or two, and I still think that's what's going to happen. So I don't know. I mean, there's no point going back to preseason predictions, but it's just so crazy to me that everybody was kind of not writing off, but like putting the Yankees definitively over a core that's won 2 straight division championships and is coming back pretty much the same team. So this is, I mean, their record is better than I expected, but they're playing about as well as I expected them to this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I also predicted the Red Sox to win the division. I thought the pitching staff would carry them, and I thought the lineups were close enough that, you know, it wouldn't be as big an advantage as a lot of people thought. And I think that, you know, there's a lot to this notion that people were giving the Yankees pitching staff a little too much credit. And I think, you know, Severino had a great year last year. Let's not take anything away from him. He made adjustments. He's a good pitcher now. But we clearly saw that the Red Sox can get to him. And then Tanaka, you know, he wasn't all that impressive. He looked good for a stretch, and then he gives up that big home run. So I think with Tanaka, he's a little bit trick or treat, and you don't know what you're going to get from Sabathia. There's a lot of question marks in that rotation, and I think even with the Red Sox injury issues, there's still more certainty within that rotation.
Yeah, I like the Red Sox rotation more, but I like the Yankees rotation a lot too. I think Tanaka's awesome. That splitter is gross.
It's no Ohtani splitter, though.
Well, nobody's Ohtani. Oh, suspension news.
Uh-oh.
6 games for Kelly, 5 for Austin.
Okay. Popping off right when we're on the podcast. This is good timing. All right, so let's switch gears here a little bit. Let's talk about the minor leagues, something that we try and do every time we're on this podcast. I can't believe the amount of shit that's happened in a week, though, dude. So we haven't talked in a week, and it seems like everything has occurred. But one of the things that did occur was Michael Chavis was banned for 80 games for violating the substance abuse policy, performance-enhancing drugs. This is kind of disappointing in a number of levels. So we already talked about this last week, that it was a little bit disappointing that both Groom and Chavis were going to be starting the year on the DL. And then knowing that Chavis isn't going to be back for 80-some-odd games is pretty disappointing for a guy who, just last week on the show, you remarked, I mean, his only standout tool is power at this point, and he gets popped for performance-enhancing drugs.
Yeah. Tell me about it. I live in Portland. The Sea Dogs just got infinitely more boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks. I don't know. There's definitely going to be a perception that last year's breakout was because of the PEDs. I have no idea if that's fair or not. I think it's worth mentioning that they get tested through the season too, and he didn't fail any tests during the season. But either way, it sucks. It's hard to buy his excuse that it was like an unknown substance or he took something. It's plausible, but it's just the thing that everybody says when they get popped, and there's no way that everybody's telling the truth. So at this point, you kind of just have to assume everybody's lying. So hopefully they'll be able to come back and still be the same guy. But there's really no positive spin you can put on this.
Yeah, there's no positive spin at all. I mean, you don't get to see the guy play. He doesn't get time to progress as a player. And then also, you got to think that his trade value is going to take a little bit of a hit from this.
Oh, absolutely. I kind of looked at him. If they needed to make a big trade this summer, he was kind of the guy. And now I don't know who it is.
Yeah. You know, especially with Groom not pitching yet. Do you know when Groom is supposed to be able to come back from the DL? Has anybody decided how long this flexor strain is going to take?
I haven't seen anything since it was first announced. But when it was first announced, they were saying kind of like the end of the month. So I don't think it hasn't gotten worse, at least. At least nothing's come up publicly to say that.
Rough system. Looks a little bit rougher here. So one of the things that I was doing before we got on the show, Matt, is I was looking up the minor league teams for the Red Sox that are playing right now and looking at their records. And, man, I have to say, last week when we talked about this, I said Pawtucket and Salem would be worth watching. You agreed with Salem. Thought Pawtucket might be okay. All the teams have been sucking so far except Salem. Salem's 6-1. They look like a powerhouse right now. They have that sick rotation. They've got a lot of really good position players. Salem looks good, but every other level looks like shit. What's going on?
Yeah, I don't really look at minor league records, to be honest with you. I mean, I have to do the box score recap every day, and I couldn't even tell you what their records are. I don't really. I got that from what you were saying. I look at the player performances, and
right,
they have a ton of standouts, but I don't know. It's nice to have winning minor league teams, but it's not like the end of the world if you don't.
So I will say this, though. I think Pawtucket is only going to get better, especially as they get guys coming back. Velasquez should be back at some point, you know, barring health with the team. And Rudisny Castillo is playing pretty well for them. I think they should be at least a decent-ish club.
I don't know, man. That lineup's not that impressive.
It's not that good, but it's also not that bad.
I guess it depends how you feel about Sam Travis.
Well, I like Sam Travis a lot more than you do. But Sam Travis is off to a putrid start, as it is. But one of the things I wanted to do was sort of point out a few of the guys so far who have been huge positives in the minor leagues. There's no one to point out who's had a positive start at AAA, so I'm just going to pretend that Pawtucket doesn't exist right now. Also, AAA to me, sort of the least exciting level of baseball, so I don't really care. AA, up in Salem, up in Portland, Esteban Quiroz, who you're going to be able to see a bunch of times this year, currently has a 1,271 OPS. He's slashing .333, .462, .810 right now. Absolutely crushing the shit out of the ball, and it seems like every time you post one of those minor league lines, he's featured.
Yeah, he had a. I think he's too good for Double A. That's kind of what I'm getting. He hit two home runs last night, Wednesday night. I don't know. I don't know when people are listening to this. So Wednesday
Friday.
Night, he hit two
people
home runs.
People will be listening to this Friday. So yeah.
Wednesday. Yeah. I'm gonna see him hopefully on Monday, Patriots Day. I don't think I'm gonna see him after that. I feel like he's gonna get promoted to Pawtucket pretty soon. I want to say he's like 26. I was a little surprised he was in Portland at all. Yeah, he's 26.
And he was playing in the equivalent of AAA last year and dominating.
Yeah, the Mexican League, right. Which is where Hector Velasquez came from too. So I think they kind of were crowded on the infield in AAA, which is why he's in Double A right now. But he's exciting. He's gotten those kind of Dustin Pedroia comps, which everybody loves to give, and they're always ridiculous. I don't think he's that good, but he's definitely the most exciting position player in Portland right now, which doesn't say a lot, but it's something.
We have to give some props where props are due, because this Dombrowski regime has been really good at scouting out Mexican League talent.
That was, yeah, that was a focus for them, and it's working. That's not really a, it's not really a place where a lot of teams are scouting, and I bet that's going to change soon, especially if Quiroz has some success in the majors.
Yeah, yeah, it seems like they're exploiting a resource that not a lot of people are focusing on right now. The other guy I wanted to focus on who's up in your neck of the woods is Cole Sturgeon. Right now in the early going, he's got a 913 OPS. He's been hitting the shit out of the ball. Looks pretty good.
Yeah, he's repeating the level. He's 26. I don't know. I'm not super – it's nice. He had a – he got some time with the Major League team spring training too, so – I don't think he's really anyone to keep an eye on, but it's, he's playing well, so that's cool.
All right, let's move down to the sexy level of Red Sox minor league ball, which is High A Salem. Three guys I wanted to point out, plus another guy you mentioned. Brett Netzer, pick in last year's draft, currently has an 800 OPS. He's a college bat, pretty advanced, but he's certainly handling the level well. And then two guys we were really excited about last week, Bobby Dalbec, 942 OPS so far. He's been hitting a lot of home runs. And Darwinson Hernandez, five innings pitched with six Ks so far. Those guys have all been great, but the other guy you mentioned was Daniel Gonzalez, who's been really good for them.
Yeah, so Gonzalez is a guy who doesn't have great scouting reports, but he kind of jumped on my radar last year. He bounced around between Greenville and Salem, and he bounced between the rotation and the bullpen, but he was good pretty much wherever they put him, and he's been on piggyback duty this year, coming out of the bullpen but pitching four or five innings.
You love those and, guys.
Yeah, I do. I think he's – well, I mean, in the minors, it's more they don't have room for him in the rotation, but they want him to pitch a bunch of innings, so – but he's this year, he has eight innings, 14 strikeouts, and one walk.
Yeah,
and that is pretty awesome. Yeah. So I've never seen him. I don't know what his stuff looks like. I don't know a ton about him. But the numbers are intriguing, and he was someone I had an eye on coming in. So that was exciting. Netzer is a future bench player, probably. He's not super exciting, but he's got a decently high floor, solid hit tool, not much power. Dalbec, I think I said last week, I'm not as high on him, I think, as you are.
Mm-hmm.
The swing and miss is kind of concerning. He's got, let's see, he's struck out in a third of his plate appearances this year. So he's kind of doing the all or nothing thing, and it's working right now. I don't know how much longer it's going to last. And what was the other one? Hernandez, right?
Darwinson, yep.
Yeah, he made one start. I didn't see any reports on him. The numbers were okay. The command wasn't great, but he didn't give up a lot of hits. I'm really interested to know how much he's using that slider that he debuted in his last outing of the year last year. I think that's going to be the key to see whether or not he makes that next step. But he's the guy in Salem that I'm most excited about.
I can see all three of those individuals that we just talked about, Darwinson Hernandez, Bobby Dalbec, and Brett Netzer, eventually moving up to Portland this year. Certainly Dalbec and Darwinson.
See, I don't know about – actually, Hernandez is older than I thought. He's 21. I don't know. I kind of feel like Hernandez, if he does, it would be like the very end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're going to take him a level at a time, unless he just like goes bananas. I could see Netzer and Dalbec getting a call, though.
So let me just defend Dalbec a little bit here. And I get that you don't like the all-or-nothing approach that he has. And he's certainly as close to a three true outcomes player as you can probably find in the minor leagues. But I think that Dalbec has an advanced enough eye at the plate that he's able to identify what pitches he needs to attack. And, you know, he played Pac-10 baseball at a high level. I think that this guy is a little bit better than maybe we're giving him credit for. And I think that maybe he won't – we won't really know what he is, I think, until he gets to AAA and he actually sees consistent breaking pitches.
Yeah, it's fair. I definitely have a bias against his type, so I'm probably always going to be lower on him than I probably should. So that's worth keeping in mind. I think it's always important to notice your blind spots and your biases. He's definitely one of them.
Well, one guy that you're not blind about, and the last guy that we'll talk about tonight, is CJ Chatham, who is still down at Greenville, who I think is – we both think is not long for that level. And certainly if he keeps hitting like this, he's going to be up in Salem very soon. But he's got a 959 OPS so far in the early going. He looks good.
Yeah, not a ton of extra base hits, not a ton of walks, but he's putting the bat on the ball. He's getting hits. Again, this is one of those things – it's hard to know just from the box score, especially at the lower levels. You have no idea how many of his hits are because, I mean, I don't know if you watch low-level minors. I used to go to spinners games all the time. And defense is so bad.
Oh, yeah.
So it's hard to know if he's just benefiting from bad defense or not, but the numbers are good. He's a guy that ideally would be a quick mover, so this is a good start. I would hope he's in Salem in about a month.
Yeah, I think that's a fair benchmark to expect from him, especially being as high a pick as he was. But it's nice to see the guy healthy. You know, he's had leg issues since he pretty much was drafted, so it's nice to see him getting some reps in the early going.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so that concludes the minors recap right now, but we are going to move on to listener questions before we close out the show today. Tom Pringle, friend of the podcast, asks us, baseball gods said the Red Sox will win the World Series this year, but you have to sacrifice one of the starting lineup. Do you do it? Who do you sacrifice? And he notes that Brock Holt does not count as part of the starting lineup. Where are you going with this one, Matt?
What does he mean sacrifice? Like kill?
I'm just guessing, like, he means omit from the lineup for the rest of the year. I'm not thinking that Tom really wants to murder any of these guys.
Well, I was going to say, if you're talking, like, sacrifice them to the gods, then I'm not doing that. That's a little extreme.
Let's go with just they can't play.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I would do
that.
Because
they're dead.
Who would I pick? I guess Vasquez?
Vasquez?
They have two other catchers.
Oh, yeah, baby. Blake Swihart time.
Yeah, I guess I don't really know what the other answer would be. I'm definitely not taking Hanley out.
No, you're definitely not taking Hanley. I don't even think that's in the discussion right now.
Well, I guess they win the World Series no matter what, right? So it's not really about the results. It's just about aesthetics.
Right, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I'd still pick Vasquez.
You know, I was all prepared to go JBJ because of how frustrated I am with his cold streak, but I'm going to go Vasquez too.
You want to be boring. Yeah, I don't want to lose that defense.
No, I want to watch it, even though he's terrible to watch the plate sometimes. And the fringe benefit for me is I get to see more Blake Swihart, so that is a very good fringe benefit. Next question here comes from Brian Pickett, and he says, does Dempster still have the dumbest reason for hitting a player with a pitch? I don't remember this at all.
You don't remember this?
No.
This is like the lowest moment. I don't remember what year it was, but this was when A-Rod got suspended, and he was appealing it and playing, and the Red Sox decided to send a message for no apparent reason because he was appealing that suspension.
This must have been 2012, right?
Something like that, somewhere around there. But he missed like two or three times, and then he finally hit him. And then the next at-bat A-Rod came up and just destroyed a home run off him. It was just awful. So, yeah, I can't think of anything dumber than that.
Yeah, that sounds pretty dumb. And now that you are saying it, I do remember people actually gunning for A-Rod after all that stuff came out. And I thought it was pretty stupid and pretty hypocritical when they were doing that. So, yeah, I think I'm with you. Next question comes from Thick Porcillo. Great handle. And he says, what's the move for the Red Sox in the event of a long-term injury for Price? Is it Sale, Porcello, Rodriguez, Pomerantz, Johnson to the rotation? Does Stephen Wright even get into the mix? And then our next question from Caleb Phelps is about Stephen Wright as well. So let's kind of take these together. I think this is worth exploring because in the worst-case scenario, Price is a Tommy John guy. So what happens?
I think Wright, when healthy, would get a shot just because of the veteran. I mean, when in doubt, I think it always goes to the veteran. Plus Johnson is already at that point, would be moving back and forth between the rotation and bullpen, so it would make more sense to start him in the bullpen. But I don't think that Wright would get a very long leash.
Yeah. I don't know how impressed I am with Wright at this point. I mean, he's been good, he's been bad, he's been inconsistent. I like what I've seen from Johnson. I'd probably feel more comfortable with Johnson as the fifth in that rotation in the event that, you know, you're going to need to stick with one guy for the rest of the year. I'd probably rather have him than Stephen Wright, but I get what you're saying.
You don't have to stick with one guy for the rest of the year, though. Yeah. I think that's the most important point.
But I'd like to.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think I would probably go with Johnson, too, but I think the team will go with Wright at first.
Okay, that's fair. 2 minute warning says he's getting a little annoyed by the Alex Cora decisions. Is that fair? Benching Benintendi for Mitch Moreland after Boston had 2 days off in less than a week, then pitch hitting Sandy Leon over him being the latest example. I agree. He may be taking this rest stuff a little too far. I mean, Benintendi, amazing. And especially after the game he had on Tuesday, I don't know why you take your foot off the throat of the Yankees and not play him on Wednesday.
I think, well, to answer the first question, it's fair to be annoyed because you are either an adult or not an adult, but I'm going to assume you're adult because it's easier. And I'm going to say you can do whatever the hell you want, 2 minute warning. I'm not your dad. But as far as the, it would be, maybe I am, shit. But as far as benching guys, I don't love it, but I think there's something to be said about having a plan and sticking to it. Cora very clearly believes in resting his guys, and he said before yesterday's game that it's not even as much about resting guys as it is about getting everybody else playing. Mm-hmm. Because you need guys like Mitch Moreland and Brock Holt and all these guys to get their plate appearances, because you're going to have injuries pop up and you don't want them hardly playing before those injuries and then suddenly having to go into an everyday role. You kind of want them to get into a little bit of a rhythm at least. So I didn't love seeing Benintendi on the bench, but Cora has his plan. He's sticking to it. He's presumably communicating with the players and telling them a few days ahead of time that you're getting this day off. So Benintendi was already ready for it. I think that people are justified to be annoyed, but maybe taking it a little too far.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there is something to sticking to your plan when it's still April. You know, the calendar hasn't even flipped till May, and it'd be kind of early to start abandoning the plan. I will say, though, I have been thinking about Mitch Moreland signing with the team since his playing time has been cut so drastically. And I wonder how beneficial the few at-bats that he is getting is going to be to him this year. You know, is it really keeping him sharp? I don't know if this is enough to keep him sharp. And then the other question I had is, you know, with some of the depth they have in the minor league system, if you're not going to be playing Moreland and you could get something for him at the deadline, why would you keep him on the team at this point? Especially if Hanley's playing well. I don't know. It seems sort of like a move where Moreland probably thought he was going to have a lot more playing time than he's actually getting.
Well, it was definitely kind of like in case they didn't get Martinez. They could trade him at the deadline. They can't trade him until, I think, June 15th is the date they can trade free agents. But I don't know. I think he likes it here. I think there's something to be said about that. I think they like him, and he likes it here. I think when he signed, there was an understanding that if they did get JD Martinez, he wasn't going to be playing a ton, especially if Hanley was playing well. So I don't know. I don't think he's going to be too upset about it. I don't think that they would be able to get much of anything for him at the deadline. I mean, I've come around on Moreland. I like him as a dude, and he's a fine player, but he doesn't have a ton of trade value.
No, he doesn't. But to another contending club, I think it could be valuable with a little bit of pop off the bench and some decent defense. But I guess you could say may as well just be kept on the Red Sox because we expect.
Well, the thing is, if you're trading him to a contender, what are you getting back? You're not getting anything back to help you this year because they're contenders too.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Next question comes from Santiago Aragon. He says, should the Joe Kelly statue be made of pure gold? Matt, what say you?
Sure, the Red Sox have money. I'm always in favor of the owners taking a little more money out of their pocket.
I'm going to poo-poo this one. If a Joe Kelly statue is going to be made, it needs to be made of a metal that's comparable to the career that Joe Kelly has had to this point. And even though he did carry himself admirably yesterday, I'm going to say bronze is the best material he's earned at this point.
Sure. I don't know anything about metals. I'll go with that.
Yeah. All right. Roy Jacobs is next. He says, am I allowed to be against Price's contract exclusively because in year three he has just two starts, giving up three runs or less to the Yankees?
Oh, like I said, 2-minute warning. You can do whatever you want.
You're a grown-ass man, Roy.
Maybe. I don't know you. But, yeah, I think that's absurd, but it's baseball. I don't care what you do. As long as you're not, like, actively hurting somebody, I'm not going to tell you how to root for the team. Just don't at me about it all the time, please.
Roy, it's my only request. Adding Matt. Stop doing that. Matt LeBeau is our next question. He asks, Brock Holt or Su-Wei Lin? This is a really interesting question, in my opinion, because Brock Holt has done nothing to impress me this year. You know where I stand on Brock Holt and the bat and all this nonsense. I would rather have Su-Wei Lin playing, and I know you just wrote an article saying the same thing. So for me, it's Su-Wei Lin.
Yeah, I think he definitely deserves a shot. A few people have made the point to me, which I think – I'm not even sure I agree, but I think it's interesting – that when everyone's healthy, it makes more sense to have Holt as the guy on the major league bench with Lin kind of playing every day in the minors. Not so much because he's a great prospect and needs like that development time as an everyday player, but he's still kind of working to be that Brock Holt versatility guy. Lin has played a little bit of center field, but not a ton, so... For now, I would like to see Lin playing more than he is. He still hasn't gotten a start since Xander's been out. But once Bogaerts gets back, I kind of want to see Lin go back to Pawtucket and play at least half of his games in center field and get him ready for that role. And if Holt is still struggling so much in, like, July, then you make the change.
I think that's a good point. One of the things I've been talking about or talking about to other people, I guess, is the idea of when Pedroia and Xander both come back, it does seem like Brock Holt at this point would be the guy who gets bumped. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, if everyone else is healthy. Yeah. I don't know. I guess it would be either him or...
Or Swihart.
Or Leon.
Or Leon, yeah.
But it's definitely... Swihart's another guy. It's very strange that he's not playing at all.
He should be getting more playing time.
Yes. I just wrote that the other day, too. It's very weird. I don't really have an explanation for it.
It's going to be interesting to monitor. I did aggressively yell at Blake Swihart while I was at the game. I mean, all positive things.
I would have been very embarrassed if I was with you.
Thank you. Luckily, it was just my wife. Maggie VT, which I guess stands for Vermont, probably. In the end, was David Price worth it? I'm really gung-ho about the signing, wondering how much of it was smoke and mirrors. I think we probably answered that, right? Like, we both think that the David Price signing at the time was the right idea and that he had a good 2016 and, you know, he got injured.
I don't know. I think it's fair to say all of these things. It was a good signing at the time. I'm mostly confident in him. I'm glad he's on the team. He probably hasn't been worth his contract. I think all of those are fair statements.
Yeah, I would agree with all of those things. So I don't have a ton to add. Timothy Tim says, why haven't we just settled on that Martinez will only be a DH? Doesn't feel comfortable with him in the left. He doesn't want to hurt his feelings, but taking Benintendi out of the lineup, blah, blah, blah. Basically, he's saying that Martinez's defense is not good, and that we should not be playing him in the outfield at all, considering that when it's Benintendi, Betts, and Bradley, the outfield is exceptional defensively.
Yeah, I get it. I'm so sick of it already. Not Martinez in the outfield. He is bad. He's worse than I thought, and I knew he was bad. But the complaints make him sound like it's me playing off field. it's not that bad. Last night, the Gary Sanchez home run that Martinez lost in the lights. If one more person uses that as an example of bad defense, I'm gonna lose my mind. Like, the guy lost it in the lights.
Right.
People do that. It looks really ugly, but that has nothing to do with defensive skills. There are so many other plays you can point to. I don't know. I mean, I would love if he was only a DH, but he clearly signed with the understanding that he's going to play some outfield. And if you're 2 weeks into this contract, you're not going back on that word yet. We're just going to have to live with it.
Yeah, and I think that if slightly worse defense comes at the expense of getting guys extra rest so that they feel better towards the end of the season, I'm okay with this. And you know what?
I don't think it's slightly worse defense. He's bad.
He might be bad, but Manny was bad too, man.
Yeah. That's the other thing. Martinez has to get used to the wall. There's been a couple plays. He doesn't know how to play the wall yet, which is understandable. He just got here, but yeah, it's ugly.
He will figure it out.
Yeah.
He'll get better. He'll be better than he is right now.
He made a couple of nice plays last night. Well, decent plays. He had to move a little bit.
Well, at least we know he can move. All right, so with that concludes the podcast today. If you enjoyed the podcast, please follow us, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere where you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at @DevJake. You can follow Matt on Twitter at @MattRYCollins. Log on, give us a rate and review, and let us know what you think. And thank you for joining us. We will be with you next week.